It was the middle of the night. Snapped her neck. She made a harsh clicking sound between her teeth.
Oh, Allegra, Gran said. Don't mock. It was horrible. Horrible.
She ran the braid between her fingers.
I raised her from the time she was a baby.
How old was she when she died? I asked.
Barely 14, Gran said. Still a little girl. I'll never forget how she looked, tangled up in her white nightgown.
I glanced from the book to Gran's face, searching for tears, but Gran's expression was as placid as ever. She turned the page.
Now this, she said, tapping a smattering of hair glued to the page. This is your mother's hair, Allegra, and this,
she pointed to an identical lock next to it.
This is your mother's lane. I kept a bit from haircuts they got when they were young.
She smiled down at the page.
Camilla raised an absolute fit about it. She hated this book, thought it was disgusting and creepy.
It is disgusting and creepy,
Allegra said, but with a tone of voice that conveyed how much she loved its strangeness. I couldn't resist the urge any longer, leaned over and ran my finger along my mother's hair. Camilla, 1981, age 10, written above it in a careful hand. Both my mother's hair and Eleanor's hair were exactly like Allegra's and mine, down to the coppery undertones nestled in all the dark. I doubted you'd be able to tell our hair from theirs if ours made its way into the book someday. Gran started to close the book, but Allegra's hand stopped her. Allegra turned to the final page, even as Gran tried to rise up from the chair.
What's on the last page?
Allegra asked. The book fell back open on Gran's lap, a few wispy tendrils of hair attached to the page with a pale yellow ribbon. Emmeline, 1984. 6 months.
Oh, Allegra breathed out. The dead baby.
Did you cut it yourself? Before the funeral? I asked, and Gran gave me a startled look. Maybe surprised I could be as unfeeling as Allegra when the mood struck me.
Yes, she said.
She died in her crib, Allegra said, glancing at me.
Yeah, you already told me.
You were the one who found her, right?
Allegra asked, poking Gran in the shoulder, twisting the knife.
She looked like she was sleeping, Gran said. Except her little lips were blue, and she was so cold. I thought if I warmed her up, she'd be all right. Your granddad had to pry her out of my arms. I cursed him something awful. Swore I'd never hold another baby again.
Gran took a deep breath and closed the book. She looked up at Allegra.
Of course, you came along and made a liar out of me.
Gran still wasn't crying, but there was a slim crack in her facade, like the tiniest fissure in a smooth pane of glass. Allegra hesitated for a second, and then leaned over like she was going to give Gran a hug. Gran made an impatient sound, batted Allegra's arms away as she stood. I already knew Gran wasn't a hugger. Maybe now I knew why. Maybe that final embrace with Emmeline was the last one Gran ever wanted. When Tommy pulled up to the end of the drive to pick up Allegra and me, Cooper wasn't with him.
He's meeting us at the party, Tommy said with an apologetic smile.
Why?
Allegra asked.
Don't know,
Tommy said, but the flush on the tops of his ears gave him away.
Did you know he wasn't coming?
Allegra asked me, as she climbed into the passenger seat and I got in back.
No,
I said.
But it's not a big deal.
But inside, I had a feeling it was. Ever since the day we'd spent in his bed, things had been different between Cooper and me. Nothing had changed to an outside observer,
We still spent time together, still slept together, still gravitated toward each other whenever we were in the same room. But underneath, something had shifted. At least for me. Every time I saw his face, I could feel a dark swirl of meanness and fear rising up in me. The emotions so entwined, I couldn't distinguish where one ended and the other began. I told myself to stop, but I couldn't seem to find the switch that turned off my own worst impulses. Instead, I avoided conversation, ducked out from beneath Cooper's arm, and never let my eyes meet his when we had sex. I tried to tell myself Cooper didn't notice the difference, but maybe him not coming with Tommy tonight meant he did. The party we were going to was being held at some guy's farmhouse. His parents were out of town and the whole place was overrun with kids. There was a huge bonfire burning in a pit in his back lawn, and already the ground was littered with crushed beer cans. My eyes were immediately drawn to Cooper, who was leaning back against the deck, a beer in his hand. A girl I didn't recognize was draped along his side.
Oh my God, I can't believe that slut is here, Allegra said in a voice designed to carry.
Who? I asked, looking away from Cooper.
Becca James, Allegra said. The one I fucking Cooper? They dated a few years ago, before he dumped her lame ass.
Allegra practically yelled.
She's been trying to get him back ever since.
I glanced over at Cooper and Becca again. Her face was tipped up to his, her body turned toward him. He wasn't touching her, but he wasn't walking away from her either.
I'm gonna go get a beer, Allegra announced. Want one?
Sure, I said. Allegra stalked off with a blistering look at Becca, and Tommy stepped up next to me.
Cooper had a fight with his dad today, he said, voice lowered.
I thought that was over, I said. I thought Cooper ended all that. Tommy's smile was sad.
I don't think it ever really ends, Lane. I mean, his dad doesn't beat him bloody anymore, but they still hate each other. It's always going to be a battle.
Tommy laid a hand on my arm.
It might be better to stay away from him tonight. When he gets like this, he does things he regrets later.
Allegra sidled up with three beers balanced between her hands, and Tommy and I each took one. I let my mind linger on what Tommy had said. I didn't feel jealousy over Becca or concern about Cooper. What I felt was a weird kind of relief. I knew how to hurt him now, and how to let him hurt me back. The dance was a familiar one. My mother had helped me memorize the steps long ago. Allegra popped the top of her can, gave Cooper a swift once-over. He still hadn't moved from his spot beside Becca. Allegra turned her attention to me.
Screw him, Lane. Plenty of other guys around here. Want to meet some?
Sure, I said. Why not?
Allegra, Tommy said. Maybe you shouldn't.
But Allegra was already waving to a group of guys standing near the bonfire.
You have to meet Nick Sampson, Allegra told me. He'll be a senior this year. He played football with Tommy. He's completely adorable.
I let her drag me toward the bonfire, Tommy choosing not to follow. Nick turned out to be a thick-necked, dark-haired boy with hands like paddles. When he smiled at me, a wad of tobacco peeked out from his bottom lip. Not exactly my idea of adorable. I looked back at Cooper, saw he'd turned his whole body in my direction, Becca finally forgotten. Tommy had one hand on Cooper's chest, like he was holding him in place, and Allegra stood off to the side watching, gaze darting among all the various players. My eyes met Cooper's, and something dark and electric sizzled through the air between us. Oblivious, Nick leaned over and put a hand on my waist, got right down to business.
Want to take a walk? he asked, his voice a low rumble.
No, she doesn't fucking want to take a walk with you,
Cooper said from behind me. Before I could even react, he'd shoved me aside and taken a wild but hard swing right at Nick's head. They fought fast and furious, Nick grunting with exertion while Cooper saved his energy for punching. Nick was bigger, but Cooper was angrier, and they might have gone on beating each other all night if Tommy and a couple other guys hadn't pulled them apart. Allegra stood next to me, her whole body vibrating with excitement.
They were fighting over you, she whispered. That's so cool.
It's not cool, I said, watching blood drip from Cooper's lips. Nick's school ring had caught him on the teeth, and he leaned over, spat a sliver of ivory into the grass. His hands shook with rage, but his eyes were distant. I wondered if he pictured his father's face when he hit Nick, or maybe it was my face he longed to punch. I remembered his words about not wanting to turn into his father, about how every day he went without hitting someone took him a step further away from that destiny. Tonight, Cooper may have taken the first swing, but I'd let him right into the ring. I doubted he'd ever forgive me. I knelt down beside Nick, took his hand, and helped him stand. If you're up for it, I told him. I'll take a walk with you now.
Sure,
Nick said, his voice stuffy around a probable broken nose. It didn't slow him down any, though. He shook out his knuckles, wiped blood off his cheek with one hand. Now that the fight was over, everyone went right back to drinking like nothing had happened. They were used to swift flashes of violence, especially from Cooper. I didn't look at Cooper as Nick and I walked into the darkness. Outside the ring of light, Nick turned to me, pushed me back against a tree. His mouth was too wet, his tongue too meaty. He smelled like stale sweat and beer. I let him touch me, lift my shirt, and shove his hand down my shorts. I let him do what he wanted, because I couldn't think of a single reason why I shouldn't. Now, when I open my eyes, Cooper's already awake next to me. I can tell from his breathing. I've never slept all night in a bed with him, and if I ever pictured it happening, it was not like this. The smell of alcohol is strong, leaking out of my pores onto the soft cotton sheets. Sunlight streams in through the window and colors my naked skin a warm, honey yellow. I turn my head to look at him, and my brain protests the movement, sends the room into a fast spin. My stomach somersaults up into my throat. Oh, shit, I moan, and cover my eyes with one hand.
You're hurting, Cooper says.
It's not a question, and he doesn't sound particularly sympathetic.
Yeah, I overdid it.
My voice is husky and weak.
Want me to get you some water? Or something for your head?
No, just give me a minute. My whole body throbs, not only my head. How long have you been up?
A while. I'm gonna go make some coffee.
I peek out at him from between my fingers. Okay. Thanks. Cooper rolls away from me, his spine stretching underneath his sun-brown skin. Once he's left the room, I force myself to sit up. The pounding in my head increases, and I take a few deep breaths, tell myself I'm not going to be sick. I manage to find my shorts and underwear tangled on the floor, but I don't see my bra or shirt anywhere. For all I know, they're still in Cooper's truck. I grab a faded t-shirt of Cooper's from his dresser and pull it on. I make my way gingerly down the steep staircase, narrowly avoiding tripping over the black lab sprawled at the bottom. I squint against the morning sunlight flowing in through uncovered windows. Already I smell coffee brewing. Cooper's house is clean and spare. The color's light. I imagine there's relief in stepping through this front door after a day at the dank garage. He loves this house. It's obvious with one glance. It's there in the polished wood floors and the fresh paint, the framed photographs on the mantle and the easy charm. It's a good room, a good house, and I feel childishly jealous. I never had any plans to return to Osage Flats, but if I did, I always expected to find Tommy settled. It was no surprise to learn of Sarah. Somehow I never thought Cooper would have a place to call his own. I thought he'd end up more like me. A drifter even if he never set foot outside of Osage Flats. Someone content to float from bed to bed, day to day. Seeing this house Cooper has turned into a home makes me feel even more like an imposter in a grown-up's body. My life could be an 18-year-old's. And Allegra, still living at home, still sleeping in the same bedroom she'd had since birth. All the Roanoke girls somehow unable to grow up, stuck in a suspended childhood their entire lives. I follow the gurgle of brewing coffee into the pale yellow kitchen. The room is small and needs updating, but it feels cozy. The window above the sink giving a view of wheat fields that melt into the horizon. I pull out a chair and sit down at the table, rest my forehead in my hand. "You might want to invest in curtains," I tell Cooper. "All this sunshine is a killer." He snorts.
"I think the real problem is the 40 drinks you had."
"It wasn't 40," I grumble. Cooper puts a mug of coffee down in front of me, and I cradle it between my hands, breathe in the bitter smell. "Your dog almost made me break my neck, by the way."
"That's Punk. He's good people."
I attempt to roll my eyes before thinking better of it, wary of the pounding in my head. Cooper takes his own mug and hops up onto the counter, long legs dangling.
"You want something to eat?"
he asks.
"I can scramble some eggs or make some toast."
I shake my head carefully, but even that's a mistake. "No, coffee's good."
"So?"
he says, after we've both had a few fortifying swallows.
"What set you off last night? You came into Ronnie Joe's in pretty bad shape."
"Nothing."
"Nothing."
"Can we not do this right now?" I ask with a sigh.
"What? You mean talk? Like normal people?"
"We've never been normal people, Cooper," I say, which doesn't even net me a hint of a smile. Cooper sets his mug down on the counter next to his hip.
"We're not kids anymore, Lane. It's time to grow the fuck up."
He's not quite angry, but he's somewhere in the neighborhood. What's that supposed to mean?
"It means I've tried to make a life for myself. A decent one. It means that I've worked really hard not to turn into my father. To not use the way I grew up as an excuse. I'm not willing to go backward."
I glance over at him. "Yeah? Don't you still work at his garage?" Cooper's face hardens. His hand clenches on his leg.
"Low blow,"
he says, voice tight. I shrug. Remembering all the nasty, unfair things I said to Jeff near the end. "What did you expect? People don't change, Cooper."
"Not really." "Yes, they do. If they really want to. And no matter what you think, I'm different than I was at 18. I'm not interested in a repeat performance. And last night felt like that's where we were headed."
He runs a hand through his hair.
"I can't do it again. It hurt too much the first time around."
This is a Cooper I've never met. One I didn't know existed. Part of me didn't truly believe he was capable of being hurt. At least not by someone like me. But age has made him braver. More willing to put all his past grievances on the line. For me, The passing years have had the opposite effect. I'm more scared than I've ever been.
He hops down from the counter and leans over me, his hands on the chair back behind me.
But we could start over,
he says.
Couldn't we? I think we had something, Lane. Even way back then. Something good, hidden underneath all the crap we threw at each other.
I force myself to look up at him, keep my breathing steady. I feel trapped in a way that has nothing to do with his arms bracketing me, holding me in place.
What are you even talking about?
The annoyance in my voice is a relief to me. I wasn't sure what I would give away when I opened my mouth.
We could start over.
He repeats as he traces one finger down my cheek, slides it gently across my bottom lip. I open my mouth, let him slip his finger inside, lick the tip with my tongue. I wait until his eyes go soft and hazy, and then bite down.
Hard.
Jesus!
Cooper hisses, yanking his hand free.
What the hell was that for?
Don't do that again. My heart hammers so violently, I imagine it's about to barrel right out of my chest.
Don't do what again?
Don't try and pretend we're something we're not.
My breath is coming fast and sharp, stinging in my throat.
It's bullshit, and it makes me want to puke.
Cooper backs away, his face a careful blank, eyes empty. It's a look I remember well.
Maybe you're right,
he says.
Maybe people don't change. Because God knows, you're still the same heartless bitch you've always been.
Sometimes it's a revelation, even to me, how much more comfortable I am with cruelty than with kindness. I spend the day sleeping off my hangover in my humid, stuffy bedroom, sheets slick with sweat. Around 6, Granddad knocks on the door to see if I want to drive into town with them for dinner, but I ignore him until I hear his footsteps retreating down the hall. After Granddad's truck rattles down the drive, I get up and shower, find myself some leftover macaroni in the fridge, and eat it cold while standing against the counter. Twilight is settling in, lighting up the sky with the reddish glow that means a storm is on the way when I decide to go into town. Charlie is out in the barn feeding the cats and gives me a wave as I drive past.
Still here?
He calls, and I stop, lean over to talk to him out my open passenger window. So far, I say, trying for a smile. He doesn't smile back.
Thought maybe you'd be gone by now.
Me too. But I need to know what happened to Allegra. Charlie nods, spits into the dirt.
Like I said before, might be we never know, Lane. Not a good enough reason for you to stay.
His eyes are phlegmy. Old man's eyes. But their gaze is keen. He picks up one of the kittens, rubs his big, scarred fingers under its tiny chin. I'm doing okay, I tell him, but my trembling hands, my whiskey-sour stomach and aching head make a liar out of me.
You sure?
Charlie asks. I nod, take my foot off the brake and coast away. There are things I can't talk about, even with Charlie, who holds all the same secrets I do. I don't really have a particular destination in mind. The Eat is out, unless I want to share a meal with my grandparents. And Ronnie Joe's is off-limits. The risk Cooper might be there too great. I stop at the grocery for some beer, and then drive around town aimlessly. Find myself at the park without making any conscious decision to stop. It's almost full dark now, and the park is deserted. As I get out, a car passes, momentarily blinding me with its headlights. The air is even thicker than usual, making it difficult to inhale a full breath. My lungs turn to sponges, and my hair takes on weight, sweat bubbling to the surface of my skin only 5 steps into the park. Heat lightning streaks across the sky. I head for the carousel, slide in through the gap in the chain link, snagging the back of my shirt on the ragged end of the fence. The only sounds are the rustling of leaves in the huge trees surrounding the carousel, the ever-present cicadas, and a lone rumble of thunder in the distance. I clamber up onto the wooden deck of the carousel and give thanks to the full moon. Otherwise, I'd be slamming my shins into horses as I move around the circles searching for my favorite, the black one with the aqua mane and the eyes rolling back in her head.
I knew you'd go for that one.
Tommy's voice slides out of the darkness behind me, and I whirl around, smacking the horse on the head with the 6-pack of beer in my hand. Scare the shit out of me, I inform him as I swing a leg up, settle myself onto the horse's back. And I always pick this one. I like her.
Her?
Tommy's next to me now, pulling himself up onto the palomino on my left. It's missing its tail, and someone has keyed a long streak down the paint on its side, leaving a glinting silver scar in the moonlight. I don't know. She always seemed like a girl horse to me. I give her a friendly pat on the head and pull 2 beers from the 6-pack, hang the remaining 4 from the horse's ear. Want one?
Sure.
Tommy takes his beer and pops the tab, holding it out from his body as foam spews. What are you doing here? I ask, opening my own can. I haven't seen Tommy since the silo. Have no idea if Sarah's told him about my visit. He's acting like the same old Tommy, but I know better now. No, he has secrets he's hiding like everyone else. Maybe I should be nervous, alone in the dark with him. But I can't make myself take seriously the idea that he might hurt me. Which is probably what Allegra thought, too. I hope he isn't playing both of us for fools.
I was headed home after a late shift. Saw you getting out. You always did love this place. Figured I'd stop and say hello.
Won't Sarah be wondering where you are?
I won't stay long. Things are pretty tense at home right now, anyway.
He hoists his beer in my direction.
A little liquid fortification before my arrival won't hurt.
I'm guessing you and Sarah had a talk? Tommy nods.
I finally came clean. Couldn't hold it inside anymore after I told you. And you were right. She knew about Allegra the whole time.
Think you're going to be able to work it out? I ask.
I don't know.
Tommy sighs, belly deep and heavy.
She wants to. And really I do too. I love my wife.
He sucks in air and I want to shout, stop. Don't say it. Because I know what's coming and I don't want to be the keeper of those words, the bearer of his unrequited flame. But he gets them out before I can find a way to deflect them.
But she's not Allegra. Oh, Jesus, I sigh. After everything, Tommy, why would you want her to be?
I lean forward and rest my forehead against the golden pole running through my horse's body. The metal is warm and slightly tacky against my skin. Allegra's never going to be what you need. Trust me. You want babies and a wife and the whole American dream. She's never going to be soccer mom material. And I think deep down you've always known it.
You're probably right,
Tommy says after a pause. He lobs his crushed beer can toward the trash barrel near the fence. It makes a loud bang on contact, but in the dark, I can't tell if it was a hit or a miss. I pull another beer from the 6-pack and hand it to him. I never quite understood it, I tell him. Allegra and you. What the fascination was. She never seemed like your type, like the kind of girl a guy like you would fall for.
Could say the same about Cooper and you. No, you couldn't. Cooper and I were a matched set. So fucked up, no one else would want us. We're like the poster children for dysfunction.
Cooper's dad did a number on him, that's for sure,
Tommy says.
But Cooper's come a long way.
Exactly what Cooper told me in his kitchen, and I didn't want to hear. Maybe I'm jealous that I'm still as messed up as ever, while he's evolved into something more than he used to be. Tommy continues.
He's not perfect, don't get me wrong. But he's turned into a good man. A better man than his dad ever was.
Tommy reaches over with his foot and snags my horse's stirrup, rattles it to make sure he has my attention.
And I never thought you were that screwed up, for what it's worth. Just young. We were all so damn young.
I laugh, but it's not a happy sound. We were young. But that doesn't excuse anything. The way I treated Cooper. This is more than I've ever admitted out loud, and I can't even bring myself to finish my sentence. Don't want to think too hard about the way I left things with Cooper this morning.
If there's anyone who understands lashing out, it's Cooper,
Tommy says.
I think he'd forgive you, Lane. For all of it. But you have to be willing to let him.
I drop my empty beer can at my feet, open another one, even though the ghost of last night's alcohol still lingers on my tongue. No offense, Tommy, but you're not exactly in a position to be giving relationship advice. Tommy laughs, the one I recognize, not the sharp-edged version from the silo.
Touché.
Besides, I thought we were talking about Allegra and you.
I used to watch her all the time, even in grade school.
Tommy shakes his head, a soft smile passing across his face.
She always seemed so fragile, underneath all her crazy bravado.
She was fragile, I say. She is fragile. Which is the simplest explanation for how Tommy fell in love with her. He was always the boy who wanted to make things better. Fix anything broken. And in a world filled with damaged goods, Allegra is the most broken thing of all. Tommy nods.
When she agreed to go out with me, I thought I was the luckiest son of a bitch in the world. Took me a while to figure out she didn't choose me. She just allowed herself to be chosen. Which isn't the same thing at all. She was never really mine.
No, I say. She wasn't. I grip my horse's mane as though I'm about to be bucked off. What do you think happened to her, Tommy? Not the cop version. The honest version. The guy who loves her version. Tommy exhales, his breath uneven.
She's dead, Lane. That's what I think. She's gone. It all got to be too much for her, and she drifted away.
I close my eyes. It's what I think, too. One way or the other, Allegra is gone. But I can't say it out loud. I've never been superstitious, never believed you can change fate through the power of a wish or a curse. But I'm not willing to risk it on Allegra's life. Not willing to voice dark words that might forever seal her fate.
If I knew anything concrete about what happened to her, I'd tell you.
Tommy says, voice quiet in the darkness. I don't open my eyes. Even if it made you look bad?
Yes.
A strong breeze blows through the trees, cooling my skin and bringing with it the loamy scent of rain. Even if Sarah had something to do with it? I ask. The slightest of pauses.
Even then?
I wish I could believe him. Then. Even when Allegra sat still, she never stopped moving.
Some part of her was always in motion, a finger twisting a long wave of hair, a foot tapping a rhythm against her chair, her tongue passing back and forth across her lower lip. But her fidgeting didn't have the same unfocused, sluggish energy I usually associated with people who couldn't hold still. Hers felt frenzied, uncontrollable almost, like something lived beneath her skin and was playing her body like a fiddle. Sometimes being in the same room with her exhausted me.
"How do you spell abortion?" Allegra asked.
My head jerked up. Allegra tapped Granddad's pocket knife against her leg, her free hand tracing the wooden arm of the chair where she sat.
"Seriously?"
Allegra laughed.
"No, not seriously."
I rolled my eyes. "Why are you always carving up stuff?" I asked, my gaze falling to the pocket knife. Allegra's hand tightened protectively around the knife.
"I don't know. I like doing it. Sometimes a word or a feeling is so strong, I have to get it out. It helps me."
"Helps you with what?" Allegra shrugged with tight shoulders.
"Feel normal, I guess. Calm."
She flicked open the pocket knife, ran the blade along the wood.
"So it's kind of like a diary?"
"Yeah," Allegra snorted. "The diary of a person with a super short attention span."
"And you don't mind people reading what you write?"
Allegra shook her head.
"No. Sometimes that's the point."
"Like when you left cunt on Sharon's cutting board?"
"Exactly,"
Allegra said, a smile on her face.
"You should try it sometime. You could write about how much you and Cooper love each other."
She mimed writing in the air with the knife.
"Lane Sullivan. Mrs. Lane Sullivan."
She stuck a finger down her throat so I'd know exactly how she felt about that idea. "Cooper and I aren't in love." And we weren't, or at least, not the kind Allegra meant. The night of the party and the fight with Nick hadn't ended things between Cooper and me, only reduced us to our lowest common denominator. Angry sex that left me hollowed out in the aftermath. We were horrible to each other now, and it felt familiar. Safe. Safer by far than whatever it was I'd felt that day in Cooper's bed. Our barbed wire affection was the type of love I understood.
"Whatever," Allegra huffed. "You two still fuck all over the place."
Now it was my turn to shrug.
"Your point?"
"I don't want to talk about Cooper,"
Allegra said, eyes flashing.
"You brought him up," I reminded her.
"And what about you and Tommy? I bet you've got a few Allegra Kennings scrawled around here somewhere." Allegra looked away from me, her gaze lingering on the view from the library window, endless green prairie rolling into the distance.
"I'm not going to marry Tommy," she said.
"He would, though," I said, "in a heartbeat."
"Even if I wanted to someday?" "Tommy's too nice for me," Allegra said. "Besides, I'll never leave Roanoke."
That stopped me. I shifted from where I'd been lying on the floor, flicking my way through a fashion magazine.
"Why not? What are you going to do here your whole life?"
Allegra's eyes snapped back to mine.
"You're not staying?"
"Forever?" I laughed. "I seriously doubt it."
"But where would you go?"
Allegra's knuckles were white where they gripped the arm of the chair. I forgot sometimes she had been born here, had never seen any place but Roanoke and Osage Flats. When I told her stories about New York, I might as well have been describing life on an alien planet.
"I don't know. It's not like I have a specific plan, but I don't picture living here with Gran and Granddad when I'm older. That would be weird."
Allegra was already shaking her head.
I don't think it's weird. They're our family. This is where we belong.
She pulled her legs up and hugged her knees to her chest.
I'll never leave here. Not until the day I die.
It was no longer a given that Cooper would be there when Allegra and I met up with Tommy in town. Sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't. Sometimes he was there with some other girl on his arm, her tongue swirling inside his mouth while his blank eyes followed me. This was where we were now, and somehow I'd always known it was where we would end up. But tonight, it was only the four of us at the park, sharing a bag of food from the hamburger stand and a bottle of bourbon. At some point, Tommy and Allegra disappeared, and Cooper drove me home after a stop at the old silo that left us sweaty and sore. Cooper pulled my hair as he came, jerking my head backward. Not gentle, not kind.
No matter what, I had you first,
he whispered, his hips bucking, teeth scraping against my throat.
Don't ever forget, I had you first.
Lately, it felt like we were trying to break each other. See who'd be the first to cry uncle and end it once and for all. Cooper didn't linger when he dropped me off. Didn't kiss me goodbye or touch my cheek with the backs of his fingers. He left me with a, see you around, and no backward glance. Roanoke was mostly dark when I let myself in the front door. A faint light glowed from the kitchen, but when I went in, no one was there. I stumbled up the back staircase, drunk on sex and bourbon, the smell of Cooper clinging to me like some exotic perfume. The scent made me feel close to tears, heavy with a melancholy I couldn't explain, and I was anxious to wash it away. I didn't bother to turn on any lights as I made my way through the dark second floor. Most of the time, I showered in the new bathroom down the hall from my bedroom. But sometimes, I preferred the old, clawfoot tub at the other end of the house. I picked my way gingerly through the sleeping porch, careful not to snag my toes on the frames of the metal bunk beds. Once in the bathroom, I kept the lights off. The moon peeked in full and bright through the uncovered windows. Allegra hated this bathroom, thought it was old and gross. But I loved how big it was. The wall of windows giving a view of the sky, the cold, white tile floor, the tub with its cracked rubber stopper on a rusted metal chain. I sank into the lukewarm water and let my hair drift out behind me. Since the bathroom I usually used had been added on after my mom left, I sometimes imagined her floating in this same tub, me growing inside her. The water nudged over my face, and I closed my eyes. Did she ever think of trying to go under? I have to think she did, knowing how she ended up. I let my head sink lower, the water lapping at the edges of my nose. Someone tapped lightly on the bathroom door and I bolted upright as Gran slipped inside. She carried a half-full crystal highball glass in her hand. I'd never seen Gran with alcohol before.
Mind if I join you?
She asked. She didn't turn on the light. Before I could answer, she'd lowered herself onto a tiny wooden chair at the end of the tub by my feet. It was a child's chair, and even Gran's petite frame looked too big for it, her legs bent like a grasshopper's.
Did you need something?
I asked. Gran shook her head, took a swallow of her drink.
No. I heard you come in. Thought maybe you wanted to chat. We don't talk enough, you and I.
It took me a second to realize Gran was drunk. Not falling down, puke in a toilet drunk like Allegra and I got, but definitely not herself. There was a slight slur to her words, and a chunk of her hair had loosened itself from her chignon to lie along her cheek. That's something a sober Gran never would have allowed.
I rarely saw Gran at night. She usually made herself scarce after dinner. For all I knew, this was her usual routine. She could spend her evenings getting quietly sloshed, and I'd be none the wiser.
"Where is Allegra?" I asked. "Is she home?"
"Who knows?" Gran said. "I never know where Allegra is. Or if I do, I'd rather not."
"She was with Tommy earlier."
"Tommy?"
Gran scoffed. She waved her arm dismissively, and a bit of alcohol splashed out of her glass, forming a tiny amber puddle on the floor.
"He doesn't know the first thing about who Allegra really is. If he did, he'd run away screaming."
I took the bar of soap from where it sat on a metal stand hooked over the side of the tub and lathered my neck and under my arms. I could feel Gran's eyes on me.
"You probably think Cooper Sullivan's always going to be wrapped around your finger, don't you?"
she asked. I hadn't known Gran was aware of Cooper. Until now, Grandad was the only one who'd mentioned him. I finished soaping myself, rinsed with water cupped in my hands.
"I don't think that," I said finally. In fact, I thought Cooper was probably about done with me.
The sheer relief that thought brought was tempered only by the corresponding ache in my breastbone. The crystal glass in Gran's hand caught the moonlight as she lifted it up, swirled the liquid inside before taking another sip.
"Probably think that body, that face, will always get you what you want. That men will forever be mesmerized by what's between your legs."
Her eyes pierced my flesh, probing, judging.
"That's what your mother thought. Always so proud of herself."
The girl my Gran described was not the woman I knew at all. My mother wore her beauty like a punishment. She couldn't escape it, so she tried to disguise it, decorated her face with tears instead of makeup, wore clothes designed to conceal rather than flaunt. I think perhaps the worst day of her life was the morning she woke up and discovered I was destined to look exactly like her. Maybe if I'd been ugly instead, she could have found a way to love me. Gran and I stared at each other, and her face folded in on itself, wrinkles hidden in daylight, making an appearance in the near darkness. She closed her eyes, pinched the bridge of her nose. When she opened her eyes, her face was impassive again, as if I'd only imagined her momentary loss of control.
"You be careful, Lane," she said, pointing at me.
"What are you talking about? I don't..."
"You be careful,"
she repeated, stood on unsteady legs.
"I'm just about done raising other people's children."
Now, I've started taking long walks through the fields surrounding Roanoke during the day. I tell myself I'm looking for clues about what happened to Allegra. But really, I don't know what else to do with myself. I was stupid to think I could be the one to help Allegra. It's more obvious every day that I can barely manage to take care of myself. Did I actually think I'd ask a few questions, make people a little uncomfortable, and the truth about Allegra would come tumbling out? I've exhausted my ideas, and the entire town of Osage Flats feels off-limits after my fight with Cooper anyway. It's more his territory than mine, and I don't want to run into him, see that cold, distant look on his face. And Roanoke is just as bad. Granddad weepy-eyed and quiet, Gran drifting from room to room like a ghost. It was clear and hot when I left the house after lunch, but only an hour later dark clouds are rolling in fast from the western horizon, blotting out the sun. I try to beat the weather back, but I'm soaked through to the skin by the time I reach Roanoke, the rain falling in thick sheets that obscure the ground only steps in front of me. I've never seen it rain anywhere else the way it rains in Kansas, like the sky has something to prove. Each thunder crack in a contest to be the loudest, the ground quivering under the aim of angry lightning bolts. I drip my way up the back stairs and shiver even in the heat. I leave my wet clothes in a heap on my bedroom floor and change into dry shorts and a t-shirt, wrap my soaking hair in one of the plush, mint-green towels from the bathroom. The storm has made the house dark as twilight, deep shadows in every corner, and I move through the empty hallway, switching on lamps as I go. The sharp tap of hail begins against the window panes, like bony fingers trying to find a way inside. The sound of the rain draws me up to Allegra's turret room. The few times it rained the summer I lived at Roanoke, Allegra and I would sit in her windows and let it blow in on us through the screens. I turn on her bedside lamp and curl up on her unmade bed. The damp towel around my head soaks her pillow, releasing the scent of Allegra's hair, and I close my eyes. Breathe her in.
"Help me, Allegra," I whisper. "I can't do this without you."
There's no answer, of course. Only the sound of rain slamming into the roof and windows. It's like being in a tiny boat, adrift on storm-tossed seas. Sleep overtakes me, and when I wake, the rain has stopped, although the sun has yet to make an appearance. I should probably get up and see what time it is, do something besides sleeping away another wasted afternoon. But I can't make myself rise. I'd forgotten the strange inertia of Roanoke, the way being inside its walls makes you stop caring very much about what goes on outside. My gaze lands on Allegra's bedside table, and from this angle, a double-paned picture frame peeks back at me. I reach out and lift it closer. The photo on the left is of my mother and Allegra's mother, Eleanor. I slide the photo out of the frame, looking for a date or indication when it was taken, but there's nothing written on the back. I would guess they are about 15 and 16 in the shot, both of them in bikinis. They stand hip to hip with their arms slung around each other's shoulders. Their dark hair blows in the breeze, Cheshire cat grins stretching across their beautiful faces. There is something faintly seductive in both their smiles, in the come-hither tilt of their slim hips, which means it was probably my granddad behind the camera. Another day of wholesome family fun at Roanoke. The second picture is of Allegra and me, taken the summer I lived here. We are both in bikinis, too. Mine red, and hers black. We are standing exactly as our mothers did 15 years earlier. White teeth flashing, coppery highlights in our hair catching the sun. I remember posing for this photograph. Tommy behind the lens, Cooper off to the side smirking. It had been the only time the four of us had visited the swimming hole together, and Allegra had insisted on this photo. Had moved me around like a department store mannequin, trying to get my limbs in exactly the right position. I hadn't known she was attempting to recreate a photograph of our mothers. Maybe she'd hoped we'd be the same girls, with a happier outcome. I remove the back of the frame and pull out the picture of Allegra and me, meaning to take it downstairs, keep it safe until she comes home. Two more photographs fall onto the bed from their hiding spot behind the original picture. The one on top is of Allegra and Tommy. A close-up of their faces, cheeks smushed together as they grin crazily for the camera. I can't help smiling at the sight of it. Underneath is a photo of Cooper and me.
He's lying on a towel spread across the trampled grass near the edge of the swimming hole, one arm hooked behind his head. I'm on my side, my head resting on his chest, my hand starfished on his bare stomach. I don't remember this picture being taken. Would probably have objected had I known. We both look relaxed. Easy in a way I can't remember ever actually feeling. The image burns my eyes, makes them sting, as Cooper's words whisper in my brain. I think we had something, Lane. Even way back then. Something good. I take all three photographs and shove them into the back pocket of my shorts, hop off Allegra's bed and leave the green towel on her pillow. My hair is still wet, and I pile it up on my head using a handful of bobby pins from Allegra's vanity. After a stop in my room to grab my sunglasses and car keys, I race downstairs and out to the garage.
"Hey, Charlie," I call. "If you see Gran or Granddad, tell them I won't be back until later."
Charlie looks up from where he's working inside the barn.
"You heading into town?"
"No."
I jangle my keys with impatient fingers. "I'm driving out to the old swimming hole." I have no idea why I want to go, what the urgency is. But now that the idea's got a hold of me, it's digging in deep. Charlie shakes his head, takes a few steps closer to me, out into the slowly returning sunlight.
"That hole's about dried up, Lane. Had a few years of bad drought in it, never recovered. Not safe to swim in it. Hell, might not have any water in it at all this summer."
My heart sinks, but I say, "That's okay. I just want to see it again." I don't even know why exactly. It's not as if looking into the swimming hole's weedy depths will bring Allegra home. Turn back time to the days when Roanoke held such promise, when I had yet to destroy what was growing between Cooper and me. But I still want to stand on its banks, even if it's no longer the same place. Stand there and remember what might have been. It takes me a long time to find it. It's been more than 10 years, and there's no clear marked path. But finally, I spot a familiar withered tree in the distance. Discover the hidden ruts through the long grass. My car bounces and rattles over the ground, not meant to cover such rough terrain. I'll be lucky if I don't lose my muffler. The wind hits me when I get out of the car, whipping across the prairie and tangling around me like vines. The sun has come out again, although clouds still race across the sky, making strange, misshapen shadows slide along the ground. From where I stand, I can see Charlie was mostly right. The swimming hole doesn't live up to its name anymore. But it's not completely dry. The dark, dirty water, probably still a good 6 or 7 feet deep. Long cattails grow out of the water's edge, and the sides of the hole are cracked and crumbling, sending tiny avalanches of rock and soil into the water. I turn in a slow circle, trying to get my bearings and remember exactly where Cooper and I were lying when the photograph was taken. I feel it in my back pocket, but I don't pull it out. Not much has changed out here, other than the level of the water and the passage of time, but somehow it's enough to skew my entire perspective. Nothing is the same as I remember it. Or maybe I remember it wrong. The air smells of dust and decay. I pick my way closer to the edge of the swimming hole, and something splashes into the water. Probably a frog or tumble of dirt, marring the surface with a few faint ripples. There's something tangled in the cattails, and my breath snags in my chest as I stumble forward. I sink to my knees, a desolate cry bursting out of me. My eyes catch on a coil of dark hair wrapped around the weeds, just beneath the murky surface of the water, and a flash of white bone disappearing into the shallow depths.
"Lane," Tommy says, "why don't you go back to the house?
Wait with your gran and granddad.
No. Tommy sighs, holds up a finger to the ring of cops waiting behind him.
They could use you there, Lane. They're falling apart.